Today we catch up for some pre-arranged interviews live from Olympia with our state senator Brad Hawkins on the agenda. Of course, we invite you to join us on our KPK legislative hotlines Thursdays and Fridays live from Olympia. But we've got some segments lined up with Senator Hawkins as well. So let's get right to it. Raining over in the state capitol today, or have you got sunshine over there, Senator Hawkins?
Well, surprisingly, Dave, and thank you for having me on again on the agenda. It is not currently raining in Olympia, which is a rarity, but it's threatening.
There you go. Some questions come up from time to time when I'm talking about this, even with some other folks. The effort to explore whether or not we might get a funding mechanism enabled for a regional sports complex or a regional aquatic center. It's gone by a couple different names. You've introduced some legislation to see if we could get what would be a second public facilities district. I never knew the first place you could only have one at a time, but that's the law right now. But tell us where the status of that legislation or proposed bill is right now.
Well, thanks for asking, Dave. In fact, I didn't even know that either. You know, this whole bill started as a result of a multiple-month stakeholder process that occurred last fall where we brought local governments together. The Wenatchee City Pool was in its final years, and since our region has grown considerably, perhaps there's something that we can do to join forces and build a public facility, perhaps even an indoor pool and some ball fields associated with it. But basically, once I got discussing everything with the local stakeholders, we realized, hey, I think what this sounds like is a public facilities district, which is a statute in Washington State that allows local governments to partner together to ultimately go out to voters to ask for a modest sales tax increase. But once we got kind of digging into the existing law, I realized we don't have the authority to form a second public facility district. And of course, years ago, the communities utilized the public facility district statute to resolve the city of Wenatchee's issue with the town Toyota Center. So my bill is basically a request to form a second public facility district. It has passed two committees so far. It has a hearing this afternoon before the Senate Ways and Means Committee. Mayor Kuntz and Crawford, and I believe Commissioner Straub and perhaps Kevin Overbay from Wenatchee East, Wenatchee, Chelan County, and Douglas County are all planning to testify. The regional port has been great, but basically we're pursuing efforts on parallel tracks, trying to gain this authority to provide clarity and statute for a governance structure and a financing mechanism. And then also, while we're pursuing that bill, there is also local stakeholders participating in perhaps a one-year study about the feasibility, our growing population, what we may want, where it might be located. And then ultimately, after all that, if that comes together, then it's really up to the local governments, the cities and the counties, to decide, do they want to partner together, go through a public process, take votes to form a public facility district, if we get the authority to do that. And then only after a public facility district is formed can then a request be made to the voters. So ultimately, the local voters will decide this at some point if we can get that far.
All right. After this hearing coming up this afternoon, what's kind of next for Senate Bill 5001?
Well, hopefully we can get the bill out of the committee. This will be the third committee because it actually took a little trip through the Transportation Committee because there is a need for a transportation project on the east side of the Otabashian Bridge. Basically, you know, we have the George Seller Bridge and then we have the Otabashian Bridge, and we have interchanges on three of the four sides. But when it comes to the Otabashian Bridge right there in Douglas County, we need some extra support. So I actually took a trip through there because my public facility district bill would allow some of the proceeds to be utilized for transportation and pedestrian improvements to a facility if that's what voters decide. But anyways, went through that committee. If it goes through Ways and Means Committee, then ultimately we can get a step closer to bringing it to the Senate floor for a vote. And if it gets approved by the full Senate, then I'll have to go through the same committee process in the House of Representatives.
Now, there's the cutoff date is coming up this Friday, so that's the first cutoff date. How does this bill or anything else you're working on, how do they survive that first cutoff date?
Well, this bill is actually on track to do that, although I think since it's in a fiscal committee, it may not be subject to this first cutoff. But this first cutoff is for policy committees to consider bills that don't have any fiscal connection or anything. And as you may know, Dave, there are thousands of bills. I think something like 1,600 bills right now in play. And a lot of the bills, if they don't pass their policy committee by this Friday, February 17th, then they will be essentially done for the session. And so over time, the legislative process has a very strict timeline and certain due dates for bills to advance further in the process. And when they don't, the job gets a little more manageable because over time there's fewer and fewer bills that make it through the process.
We're talking to Senator Brad Hawkins, and we're about a third of the way through the 105-day session this year. I want to talk about some education bills right now. Let's first off talk about a couple of yours. Addressing learning loss, and we had a chance to hear from you a little bit on, if you missed our legislative hotline, I think last Thursday, where you talked about Senate Bill 5505. This is trying to address learning loss by adding a few more days onto the school calendar. What's going on with that bill?
Well, it's kind of interesting. We have a history in the state of Washington where some of the lawmakers, particularly I would say those in the majority right now, want to nibble around the edges. They want to spend more and more money doing all a host of different things for education, but they're not really committed to taking a substantive step forward. I've suggested my colleagues can think broader and think differently because we do have a budget surplus right now. We also have a tremendous learning loss that has occurred as a result of the COVID pandemic. So I've suggested adding 5 extra state-funded days to the school year, bringing the school year from the current 180-day school year to 185. I've also dusted off a prior concept of encouraging school districts to apportion those days over a longer period of time. So rather than squeezing in 180 or 185 days into a nine and a half month calendar, perhaps they can extend it to more like 10 months. We could still have a 2-month summer break, but there would be less learning loss that occurs every summer due to the summer slide. And also, hopefully kids could catch up because some of the teachers I spoke with, teachers that are teaching currently at a junior high, they told me kids are 2 to 4 years behind grade level as a result of COVID and other things. So we really do have to think differently about our education system. And our education system is very inefficient. We start the process, we stop, and then we restart again. And we spend almost all of September reteaching. And so I think we could do some things differently. And the school calendar has become so commonplace that largely goes unquestioned, but most industrialized countries don't take a 2.5 or a 3-month break every year. I think that's bad for students, and I think it's bad for taxpayers, because ultimately, as taxpayers, we deserve a return on the investment. So this bill, I don't know if it'll advance further in the process, but the state could certainly do it if they wanted to.
What would the price tag be on that? What about the option of like year-round school? Or like a trimester thing?
I think currently school districts could take their 180 state-funded days and have a few week break in between and essentially have these trimesters and push their calendar, spread it out over a longer period. Still have a summer break, but maybe that summer break could even be a month that you have, or a month and a half, and with this trimester system. So there's a lot of different ways school districts can do it. If we wanted to truly take a step forward like other countries, we would need to probably fund around 200 days in the school year. And to go from 180 to 200 is too much of a financial leap for the state of Washington. It costs approximately $75 to $80 million for each additional day. And so, as you can see, I think we could take an incremental step forward, because currently the state of Washington has a $64 billion budget, but I believe the budget that will be approved this year will probably be in the neighborhood of over $70 billion. So to go from 64 to 70 billion, even though something may cost 500 million, is certainly achievable. And my thought is, with all the learning loss and with the extra revenue, if we can't take a step forward this year to something more like what you're talking about, Dave, when will we ever be able to do that?
Let's go to another bill, and it's Senate Bill 5670. This is Running Start for kids starting in the 10th grade. This would be online, so they wouldn't go up to, let's say, the community college like here in Wenatchee, but they could do it online for Running Start. Tell us a little bit more about this this proposal.
Well, I'm excited about this. So I have a new committee this year. I've served on K-12 education. I've served on transportation. I'm continuing to do that for this year. But new to this year for me is the Higher Education Committee. So why not dive into a new policy? I had this idea related to Running Start. Now, Running Start is a popular program that has existed since 1990, where students, and it's utilized all throughout the state, but I know a lot of Wenatchee and Eastmont students participate in Running Start. It's where juniors and seniors can earn college credit at Wenatchee Valley College, but also earn the dual credit, their high school credit. And some students graduate from Eastmont or Wenatchee High School and Wenatchee Valley College at the same time, although that's a pretty aggressive process. My thought is, Running Start is popular. It's been around for over 30 years, but maybe it's time to modernize it. And we do have a number of online courses that are now offered, even more so as a result of COVID. So my bill proposal is, let 10th graders participate in one class a quarter, up to one class. So it'll be up to 5 credits if the class is entirely online. So I consider it a walking start to Running Start. And I think it will help some students dabble in higher education. It may not be for everybody, but for the students and families that want to be challenged and certainly have the intellectual capacity as a 10th grader to knock off a few college courses, I think they should be able to do that either in the comforts of their own home or, you know, while they're at school, to step into a different room and take their Running Start program. So it's sort of a pilot program to modernize a popular program, and I believe it might be approved in the Higher Education Committee this Wednesday.
All right. I want to ask you about this proposal to allow parents more access to classroom materials. I think a lot of parents would be interested in that. I assume that's coming through a committee that you're on. What do you think about that?
Oh, yeah, I'm all for that. That's sponsored by my colleague on the Education Committee, Perry Dozier. And Perry, or Senator Dozier, serves out of the Walla Walla area. And he calls it kind of a parent's bill of rights, because basically there's been so many efforts at curriculum this session, including a couple that just passed the committee that I think are very challenging. But you know, so much is happening in the school system these days. Parents may not be able to always follow everything as closely as they want to, and they want to have access to what's happening, the ability to opt out of things. So there was a good bill proposed, but as you can imagine, it got a good hearing. There was a lot of interest and support for it, but I don't believe the Democratic chair of the committee, Senator Lisa Wellman, is going to move that bill through. That particular bill is sort of in the same spot, a holding pattern, as my learning loss expanding the school year bill.
What's the concern that parents shouldn't have more access to classroom materials?
Well, Dave, all I can say is there's a big philosophical divide right now in our school system. I believe, and as Senator Dozier does as well, that we support local control of our school districts. It sort of came about when the state force-fed the comprehensive sex education law onto the voters a few years ago. There are more bills, like I said, that are coming through the pipeline to do that. Basically, there's one school of thought in Olympia where some legislators want to essentially be the school boards for all of Washington State. They want the legislature to do that role. I don't. I want to recognize the school boards for what they are, which is local government entities, much like cities and counties. And they are elected as leaders from their community to make decisions on what they feel is in the best interest of their communities. So we have 295 different school boards across the state. I support them. I support their efforts for what is best in the best interest of their communities. But like I said, there's a tension right now among lawmakers, and many lawmakers want to mandate more and more things on the schools. Also, what I've noticed, Dave, is there is a incremental and sometimes pretty aggressive expansion of services that the school districts are providing. And, you know, it used to be that schools, the academic function was the primary function of the schools. But right now, what I've observed over time is school districts are now either being asked to do so much more, expected to do so much more, or the state is mandating more and more. But now, and we've kind of observed this during COVID, school districts are providing student meals, multiple meals a day, childcare, social emotional supports. Some school districts, including in our region, are providing healthcare services in the schools, as well as academic services. And it just is getting to the point where it's costing more and more to fund education because of all these services. And it's becoming increasingly difficult to differentiate where a school district's responsibilities end and where a family and community's responsibilities begin. And it's kind of an interesting situation right now. And what I noticed, Dave, was when I started the legislature in 2013, we had the 2012 State Supreme Court McCleary decision that we had to deal with related to basic education funding. And we made significant investments at the legislature over multiple years, over multiple budgets, to fund and fully fund basic education in our state. And then the Supreme Court acknowledged that, yes, you met that requirement. But ever since, school districts continue to say they're not funded enough, and they continue to ask for more and more out of their property taxes and their school levies to do more and more. And what has happened, Dave, is back 2012 to 2013, the average per student amount of funding was something in the neighborhood of $8,700 per student. Well, now it's over $15,000 per student. And yet a lot of school districts are saying that they don't have enough funding. And so there's a real challenge that exists. And honestly, Dave, I don't know if we'll ever be able to fully fund education in our state if we're trying to deliver all of the community services through our school districts. It's really challenging.
Well, I want to get to one more topic outside of education here. And last week there was a big hearing on this, but it's a bill I think your colleague over in the House here from the 12th District is a part of. And it's a bill making the ability for ag employers to choose 12 weeks a year where they can employ ag workers up to 50 hours a week before overtime would kick in. It gives them a lot more flexibility, I think, is the idea behind this. So I know there was a huge attendance at the hearing on this last week in the Senate in Olympia. I want to get your take on that coming from this important growing region.
Well, I believe that's Representative Gaynor's
yes.
bill. And if anybody knows about agriculture and running a business in that regard. It's Representative Gaynor with his pear orchard up in Dryden and his multiple generations with his family. So you have to trust his judgment on that. I'm not familiar with that bill in particular, but I do know that the state Supreme Court has recently weighed in on a lot of wage issues related to agriculture, and there have been some state Supreme Court decisions that has forced the legislature to try to come up with clarifications and compromises. And I believe a lot of people in the ag industry, some of the unions want to have agricultural workers earn overtime and have those options and things, more and more expanded options. Many of the people who work in agriculture, including many of the workers, appreciate the structure that they've always had, which is known as a piece rate, where you sort of get paid per piece that you pick. And the faster you can go and the more efficient you are, the more money you make. But there is an effort to try to apply some of the same wage structures in other sectors to agriculture, and it's creating a lot of challenges. So it'd be very interesting. I hope Representative Gaynor's bill can make it over to the Senate so we can have some of those same discussions here. But I do want to say that we also have the state Supreme Court, which is a separate branch of government, but they're continually weighing in, whether it was that McCleary case on education or some of the agricultural wages or the Hearst decision on water rights that you heard about some years ago, or this new capital gains income tax that they heard oral arguments for last month. So, you know, they're supposed to be a separate and co-equal branch of government, but I think they're sort of trying to assert themselves as a super branch of government. There's always a bit of a tension and philosophical differences within the Capitol building, but there's also some difference of opinion between the Capitol and the state Supreme Court building, which happens to be right there 100 feet away on our campus.
So before you have to go, any updates on working on the budget or on the Senate floor that you want to share with us before our time draws to a close here?
Yeah, so we're starting the floor action. More and more bills are being considered and debated and approved on the Senate floor. These are the bills that make it out of their committees. I think after the deadline of February 17th, we'll begin to see more and more bills that come before the committee, and that's always a little bit of a challenge. But also, we also start to shift gears a little bit to get more focus on the budgets once we get about halfway through the legislative process. Some of the budget development is occurring right now for the operating, the transportation, and the capital budgets, but more of that will kind of come to light as the revenue forecasts get dialed in and everything. Like I said, I think the operating budget is going to be a significant increase again this year. I don't know that I'll be able to support that. The transportation budget had major efforts last legislative session for the Move Ahead Washington project that passed. So I don't see significant steps forward for transportation spending this particular session. And Rep. Steele and others here in the Senate are working hard on the capital budget, and so we're hopeful that we'll be able to continue our successes for our district in that. So it'll be interesting to see how these budgets come along, but we should know more about all three budgets in the next month or two.
All right. So we'll have you on the KPQ Legislative Hotline next up on February 23rd on a Thursday edition. That's 8:05 to 8:20 every Thursday, live from Olympia with our state senators, Brad Hawkins, and now we've added Shelley Short in from the 7th District as well. In the meantime, for folks that want to get a hold of you or your staff, what's the easiest way to do that?
The easiest and the best way is through my website, which is SenatorBradHawkins.org. They can read my email newsletters, my news releases. They can learn more about me, follow activities in the legislature, but they can also contact me directly through the Contact Me page, and that comes to me and my staff. And people have any questions at all about things we discussed today or other issues before the legislature, please contact us. We're here to serve you.
All right. Thanks for joining us today on The Agenda.
Thank you so much for having me, Dave. Have a great day.
Appreciate it. That's State Senator Brad Hawkins from the 12th District, live from Olympia today with us.